to note that Representative Zarro, Representative McBride, and Representative Herman are in attendance. And today we have Nels Anderson making a presentation on what work I had him doing during the interim and up until now. And then I mentioned in an earlier meeting that I had intended during the interim to address formally some issues in the Bristol Bay fishery, but ran out of time, and so hired Nels to follow through the issues by contract with looking at shore fish release program. We also have bills in committee pertaining to this issue. The problems of processor anchoring and conflict with fishermen on this, it's a long time problem, and we hope to get something resolved by next fishing season. And the most important thing that to me that I wanted Nels to do was the fish waste problem in Bristol Bay. And tomorrow we'll be holding a big meeting with a bunch of people, different parties involved, and trying to go someplace with this issue, the problem of fish waste dumping and garbage dumping. And then, Nels, if you could go also into comments on bonnet fishing, maybe I could tell you what I plan for the committee to do is to go through all the information on the bonnet fish with Shockey. You know, she can come up with recommendations on all the studies that have been done and come to the committee with recommendations, and then from there go to the administration, see what kind of recommendations they're going to be doing towards bonnet fish. And then once we get kind of a consensus between the committee and the administration, then go to the public and, you know, see if it's workable there. And that's the plans for her, and then, you know, you can comment on what you had to say too.
Okay. So I'll hold the any bottom fish comments in toward the end of the presentation.
Yeah, and then Shockey will carry over after that.
So, shall I proceed?
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you very much. This summer, about well, I'm not sure what it was, early July, wasn't it, that you called me up and asked me to take care of some of the problems that occur every year in Bristol Bay. In all the years that that I've lived in Bristol Bay, the summer activities, you probably all know, just really intensifies very rapidly over a short period of time. And there's a lot of different things happening at once. And after I got into the legislature, I began to learn that it was a good idea to be around to handle various problems that came up having to do with enforcement, openings of fishing seasons, people complaining about planes landing on the beach and flying too low over the houses, and I mean, you name it, and it all happens over there. So I always was around to take care of whatever was happening that people thought was going wrong, and stayed right at the Dillingham area there, took calls from NACNIC, and I had a VHF and a CB, so I could be contacted through those means of communication, by telephone, or people could call up the radio station. If I wasn't at home, they'd get a hold of me, and keeping up to date and what was going on. Then I'd just transmit whatever information I had, and if I felt it was an administrative problem, then I'd try to get the administration to attend to the whatever problem was developing, and try to put a stop to it, or at least try to get some attention to it so that people would feel like they weren't being ignored during the fishing season. So Ad called me up, and I know how difficult it can be during that time of the year, and I didn't want to do the job. I really rebelled until I was really convinced that I ought to do it. So anyway, I did. And most of the things that occurred during that short period of time, I think it was a 17-day period that I worked a very short contract, and what happened during that time was that it pointed attention to all the problems that have occurred in the past, and had a development, a trend of people complaining about shore fish leasing program problems, fish waste dumping, processors and cargo vessels anchoring in fishing areas where drift net fishermen like to fish without running into a processor anchor. And last year there was a lot of controversy over gill net mesh size, and then the same problems again, as I reported earlier, about planes flying too low over homes in Dillingham, planes landing on the set net beaches there, and landing right on where the fishing activity was going on and endangering people. I passed the report on to Adelheid after I completed it with some recommendations. And then she in turn then came back later in the year with the request that I follow up on some of the recommendations that I made during the summer for attention for the next, or for this 1984 fishing season year. And the things that Representative Herman wanted me to address were bottom fishing, the shore fishery leasing program, the fish waste dumping problem, the Bristol Bay anchoring problem, and the gillnet fish mesh size, and several other issues. And during our negotiating process, I felt that the 30-day period wouldn't give me enough time to really go at the bottom fish, or I think there was one other item, I can't recall what it was, that I asked not to pay any attention to because of the time frame. I just didn't feel I could get into it in any great depth to be of any use to the committee. So I asked that I not be made responsible for that, and there was agreement to that. So I addressed my comments primarily to the shore fish leasing program. And I'll just start off there. The shore fishery leasing program is a program that was initiated back in the early 70s, I believe, when former Representative Jay Hammond was chairman of the Resources Committee. And it's a program like every other state program that really hasn't been too well publicized, but it's becoming a very important defense mechanism right now. And a lot of people who have been fishing at a fishing site now are feeling or are getting pushed out by people who are aware of this program and are forcing people with a long-term traditional fishery away from where they fished most of their lives. And this is causing an awful lot of political problems, you can well understand. So now what the program is becoming is that there are people who were not aware of the program, they are finding out about it the hard way. And as a result, there's some question on whether or not the program has to be done away with, whether it has to be amended or modified, or whether there's any need to create a new kind of program to face that issue. One of the things that I found as I went through the material that Adelheid gave me was that there's an awful lot of consideration being given to the program by internal people. There are people in the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Land and Water Management, who have met at length, apparently, last year in July of 14th, 1983. There were 8 people who met to consider the shore fisheries leasing program. And the thing that really bothers me about this, and I think it ought to bother you as well, is that in these so-called hash-out meetings that they're having, they're not taking into consideration the needs of the fishermen. They're just proceeding as though the fishermen don't exist. And to give you an idea of how I come to that conclusion is, number one, their number one recommendation to the director of the Division of Land and Water Management, Tom Hawkins, is that they abolish the program. And A, it's agreed to by everyone present with the exception of a skeptical director. Also advocated by other state agencies such as ADF&G and the Alaska State Troopers. Program has become obsolete since the inception of limited entry. Leases issued by the state that later enter into site conflicts are resolved in civil court. But what all these comments lead me to believe is that the administrators are all getting together and operating in a vacuum. They're not really taking into consideration the needs of the people. I think that's what really flies out at you if you go through this material. And that's what I pretty much report to you here and bring that to your attention as you review this program. They go at the program, they give ideas and they state, well, should this program be abolished and the pros and cons of it, and should this be amended, and if it's going to be amended, how shall it be amended and the pros and cons of those. I think these are changes that the legislature ought to look at very carefully, and I think this committee and other committees that deliberate on this particular program ought to look at it very, very carefully, because I think it is the state's responsibility to come up with a program that is going to protect the interests of the long-term traditional fishermen and also protect the interests of those people who have applied for a set net fishery under the program. So right now you do have a problem where you have people bumping up against each other, and there doesn't seem to be a real concerted effort by the department managing this thing on your behalf to really do the job for the people. So I think you need to bring that, you know, to the attention of the administrators. And my recommendations to the committee are simple. One, I think a performance audit needs to be initiated as soon as possible to see how the shore fishery release program is working now. I think it would give you an idea of, you know, it would make public how the administrators see the program. It would make it a formal type of a presentation to the public, which would become public knowledge after the budget and audit committee had a chance to review it. And second, I believe the people who run the shore fish leasing program should be given an opportunity to give their views on the program. And the reason why I say this is that it would give you a better idea of why they feel the way they do about the program. I think it would be important for you to get to know who the players are. And it seems to me that some of these people have some good ideas, but one thing that they forget is the people. They've got to, you know, and they've got to make a connection with what they're doing and how it affects people. And further, the administrators should be asked to give the committee their best shot on how the shore fish leasing program needs to be improved. When I make that recommendation to you, it leads you to my belief. I think that the program itself just simply can't be just, you know, set aside, because there are interests out there that still have to be protected. And the question is, how do you arrive at that solution? And I think it's going to take statewide hearings to do it, which leads me to my third recommendations. The recommendations that I think Representative Ward's bill and your bill and any other bills that might have something to do with the shore fish leasing program, whatever, needs to be aired. And there has to be, I think, a real concerted effort by the legislature, since the administration isn't doing anything about getting this information out about the program itself, that the statewide hearings would provide several benefits. One, it would call attention to the program, and second of all, it would highlight the problems that are involved at the present time, and it would also give the public an opportunity to, for I think the first time in the history of the program, really review what's going on and why it's happening, and then they themselves, and hopefully through that process, would give you the direction that you need to make the necessary legislative changes to the program to make it work in the best interest of the people.
You know, for the regarding the shore fish release program, you know, it's just people want to just a simple protection of, you know, being able to mm-hmm. kick somebody off there. And, like, do you know what happens on, like, a state lease land when there's trespass? Is there?
Well, as I looked into that question, you know, there was an awful lot of law on it, and back when former governor was in the legislature, he was chairman of the House Resources Committee, and he requested an attorney general's opinion, which then was reviewed by a more recent attorney general. And their conclusions are, as I understand what I read, is that when you have a shore lease fisheries permit, it gives you very limited rights. They're very limited. And the only rights that you have are at the time you are engaged in the fishery during an open period, a legal open fishing period. Any other time where there is not an opening, the public has access to that fishery as long as it doesn't interfere with the, you know, with the actual fishery itself when the season is open. So there are very limited rights attached to that. And what it does do, though, in the minds of people, if you do have that shore fishery leasing permit, it does give you some kind of protection, although it's not that, you know, it's not legally that binding. But it does present something more than what we have right now, where people would, in the past, just put their name on a piece of plywood and stick it in the ground, and, you know, that's theirs. Nobody ever bothers it. So that's changing now, and the pressure is increasing. The number of set net fishermen are increasing in numbers, or they're more active than they have been in the past, and we expect that's not going to change much. So anyway, to just go further into this, I wrote a letter to Harvey Samuelson, president of Western Alaska Marketing Association, and also wrote a letter to Mitch, the general manager for the Alaska Independent Fisheries Fishermen's Marketing Association, asking them to write to the committee and give their views on what they think about the shorefish leasing program, since they represent settlers, as I understand it. I have not received any information from them, but I would hope that they will give it some attention and give you the benefit of their thinking on this when they have the time. I only wrote the letter, letters to them on January 11th. I also wrote a memo to Representative Herman on another issue. It is tied directly to the shorefish leasing program. There's a conflict between two individuals in the Michigak fishery, where one person who fished traditionally in an area is being forced out by another person, and it's now in the courts. And we were asked to intervene, and Adelheid called me up and asked if I would give a hand on this. And I interviewed the people who were having the problem. At least I got one side of the story. I didn't get the other. And the only other side of the story I got was a case file on it. I sent the case file down here, and I asked, or I recommended to Representative Herman that the Legal Affairs Division review the complete file, and that's the earlier file on how the director of the Division of Land and Water Management, or whatever, the Division of Land and Water Management, came to the conclusion that he did. And I feel, in my review of the complete file, is that there are several inconsistencies that don't really bear up, and that's just my opinion. And I was thinking it would be beneficial to the two parties who are now expending funds of their own to prove this case, that it might be a good idea to try to negotiate this deal out if our legal affairs, your legal affairs division, were to find a flaw in the earlier decision, that then you could communicate this flaw to Commissioner Winicky, who then could negotiate it out away from the court system. And hopefully everybody's interest would be served. But this case is not going to be the first and last case. It's going to be, I think, a trend if the shorefish leasing program isn't somehow altered to make it suit the needs of people that have an interest in set netting. I again would like to call your attention to, and I know there are some other reports around, but in the reports, and you may have read them already, but they're dated July 22nd, 1983, from Lance Key, who's project administrator for Tom Hawkins, director of Division of Land and Water Management. And read it, I think, for your own information on some of the suggestions that they have for making the changes that they feel they are needed to make the program work. And I'd also caution you to, as I said earlier, I'm just saying, repeating this for you, Representative Gall, that you read it with a jaundiced eye, because I think it really gives kind of a negative viewpoint of the program. It's like they don't want it, so let's try to get rid of it.
Nels, if I might, and maybe I'm assuming something that isn't true, but obviously Fred and I and you all know what set netting is, and I think if we just give just a brief description to Peter, you know, I'm sure, what set netting is, but sort of set out why it's such a problem for Peter. Maybe
sure,
you know.
I am grateful. I know what set netting is, mm-hmm. but I don't know the nature of the problem.
Okay. The nature of the problem right now is that when I was speaking earlier about this Roseanne Savo case, so that's now in the courts, we have one individual who set net in one area for years and years and years, and all the community in the area knew that this particular site belonged to this one individual. Well, someone from another part of the country came in and just took it over, moved in, got a set net shore lease permit, and the other person was disenfranchised.
Okay. So this person got a lease from the state where the other person had fished there for years without
traditional
necessity.
Yeah. Right.
So you have to sort of understand, I think, that there was a courtesy there for many, many years that if this was my spot, nobody even mm-hmm. thought about taking it. And the longer you were there, the more it was your spot, you know. And it was a matter of courtesy. Even though everybody respected that courtesy, mm-hmm. and that's no longer there.
We have a similar problem in the Alsip and the Grand Prairie area.
But anyway, the dilemma that the state is in right now, I think that it's a problem that the legislature has, is to try to figure out how the interests of the people who have a shore lease fishery permit and those who don't, how are their interests going to be protected, and how are we going to resolve those out. I don't have any recommendation on how to solve the problem. I do have some recommendations on what I think needs to be done to arrive at a solution. And I think my third recommendation to the committee is that statewide hearings are needed because there are relatively few non-English, or I would say there are a large number of non-English speaking people who don't understand the shore fish releasing program in the Bristol Bay Area especially.
Do you think some sort of a preference right for people who can demonstrate traditional use along the lines of the native allotments is necessary?
I don't know if that, I really couldn't answer that. I don't know if that would be the right thing to do. I think that's something that the committee would have to try to determine. But there is a long-term traditional understanding, as Representative Bias pointed out, that everyone understood it and, you know, there were never any conflicts, but we are now running into that and somehow that has to be resolved.
Roseanne's case might set a precedent.
It could set a precedent. Hopefully, if there is a review of that case and it is found to have been, the original decision is found to be flawed, and you can negotiate your way out of it, there won't be a precedent. And hopefully none will be set. That's the idea. But once you set a precedent, then I think you're going to have established rights. And once you have an established right, it's going to take a lot more legislation to resolve that out in the future. So you're going to have to really grind this off in the future.
The first court found for the defendant there, the person who had the lease?
Well, the way the procedure works is that if you have a dispute, you take it to the director who reviews the decision or reviews the case, makes a decision. That was appealed, sent to the commissioner, which concurred with the directors. The people who didn't agree with that decision took to the court where it sits now. Madam Chairman, that's all I have on the shore fishery lease program.
Chairman, the only thing that concerns me there is that if the shore lease program does continue to go through, that there was a period of time where people have, because of their awareness to the program, made application or requested forms to make application and were told that the program was presently under review and there would be no action taken. So as a result, they didn't acquire any forms or submit application. And in the meantime, others have, or may have possibly refiled on top of the same areas where those people would have submitted an application but didn't.
How could they refile those programs?
Well, somebody that moved into an area, for example, which happened along Nooshigak, they went through and plotted everything out and just filed blanket applications over all those sites, and people that may have been there at one time and would have submitted an application, but were told for some reason or another that applications were not being considered, so it would be useless to do it until the program was reviewed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these are the traditional people that have been there for years. And whereas somebody else had just come in and knew about the program, went ahead and filed and put the applications in, knowing well that the department wasn't going to act on it, but have filed on there so that when the program does become recognized and an accepted program, their application is already there establishing prior use. Now, that application being in prior to somebody submitting an application in the program is a validated program. And I think that's going to happen, or we're going to see that to be a major problem.
You are going to have to bring those people in and ask them, I think, why that lapse happened. Because there's really no, as far as I can tell, there's nothing that tells me that you people told them to stop it. I mean, it seemed like it was an in-house, internal decision that they made. And then going back again to what you said, which is really critical and really important, is that there are people who are going to be disenfranchised as a result of it. And those are the people that you really have to, you have to watch out for their interests. And it's an internal thing. And your review of this material, once you read it, you'll see that there is, there's no love for the program by the administrators. And they apparently have no real feeling for them.
Why do you suppose that is the case?
I can't really tell you why.
I think say if somebody put out their buoys and running line and stuff, and it's got their name on it and everything. Somebody else could come and put their net out there and fish it. That's how much teeth the program has.
Mm-hmm.
So it really doesn't have anything. And then, like, if you went to any enforcement officers, fishing game or whoever else, they really couldn't help you. They just it has to be in the court system, and you know, people that are sitting in it just don't have time to, you know, fool around with that.
Did this come into existence because people were coming into the area and wanting to fish and being told, no, you can't fish here, this is my spot, and they would say, why, you know, how did you get it? And then they went to the government and asked for a leasing program or something?
It was, you know, it was there before there were a lot of people and stuff, and now there's kind of a need, I see, because there's, you know, a lot of permits and a lot of new people coming in.
More traffic coming in and need for some kind of a regulation system.
Well, in 1972, as I may be wrong on the date, but I believe in 1972 this program began. And I think their intention was to avoid what we're going through now. I think they were looking, you know, they were looking ahead to 10, 15 mm-hmm. years when there would be a lot of people. But apparently this thing just kind of sat there. And
so most of the people just didn't bother to apply.
Yeah, like it was not publicized. And when I opened up my comments, one of the things that, you know, it's like a lot of other programs that the state has, it's not very well publicized. Right. And even if it were publicized, I think in 1972 we didn't have a radio station there. And it would be pretty hard to get that information out anyway. And also it wouldn't have been put out, you know, in the language of people that,
yes, sir,
that live there. So it would have been pretty difficult. Those are the criticisms of the program. But I think it started out with a good intention. I think it was to avoid problems in the future, but unfortunately it's causing problems.
Mm-hmm.
You agree that some sort of program like this is necessary, or that's your opinion?
Yeah, I think it's going to be necessary to go out and ask that question to the public in statewide hearings.
Yeah.
And you'll have both sides coming at you. You're going to have the ones that have the shore fishery leasing permit and those that don't. And they're going to be telling you, yes, you're going to. I think they'll come out and tell you, there's got to be something that can protect me. And the other side's going to say, well, I've already got mine, don't take mine away.
I think the department or the division there just didn't want to make or put themselves in a position to have to make a decision who could fish there and who can't.
Yeah, a political decision.
Yeah, because there are those sites that are leased now. At least the only ones, you know, I'm familiar in Nooshigak are those right on the marker. There is no dispute there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when you move away from there, then you run into your dispute. Then you get into the Cook Inlet area. You know, I think all those shore sites are all leased out, and they're all there by the coordinates there, longitude, latitude. They're all identified as a specific site, and there's no question. You know.
And these are.
Well, here you have an area where people are just were totally unfamiliar with the program and did not participate in it when it was initially established. And now their awareness to the program is just becoming evident, and problems are beginning to arise because people have moved their sites here and there. You know,
that's what I didn't understand. People who did not have a lease, or people who did have a lease and moved their sites from here to there.
People who have fished there traditionally that did not have a lease.
Being
moved in and out.
I hear you.
See, in 1972, there was very little communication.
Can we go through the chair?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
In 1972, there was just very little communication. There's no newspaper out there. There is now, but it wasn't then. Now it's a one-to-one thing. Now there's Bristol Bay Native Association and other organizations who pass advisory agent who pass information out. That time there wasn't, and these things have just come along gradually, and a number of them just in the last few years. So, and there's 31 or two villages out there. They're hard to get to. Most of them you get there by air. It's even complicated now, but it was much more complicated 10, 12 years ago.
Yes.
Anything else you want to continue with the fishway?
Mm-hmm. Okay, if there are no other questions, then on that, leave you with those recommendations that I pointed out earlier. On the fish waste dumping program in Bristol Bay, I'll give you a little bit of background. There's always been a fish and solid waste disposal problem in the Bristol Bay area, and 1983 was no exception. And the amount of pollution caused by dumping untreated fish and solid waste into Bristol Bay is almost impossible to determine. But to give you an idea of its magnitude, 1983 found 29 land processors and 38 floating processors operating in Bristol Bay. This also included an estimated 400 to 500 support vessels. and add to that the approximately 1,800 gillnet vessels and support vessels for approximately 900 setnet operations, and you get an idea of what's happening out there. It would make the commanders of the Second World War in Normandy invasion proud to see a fleet like that move into an area. But, you know, with that kind of activity, it's bound to generate, you know, solid waste and fish waste problems. And last year, 39.1 million salmon were harvested in Bristol Bay. So you get a fairly good idea of the magnitude of the problem. And you got fish heads, viscera, solid waste being dumped into Bristol Bay. And the state needs to pay attention to it because it is an annual problem. Now, last year, the Department of Environmental Conservation had people on site, and they were going out and inspecting the plants and making sure they had grinders and that they were complying with getting the waste out in far enough away from the shore to move into the rivers and the river systems. And also there was some attempt to make everyone aware of the fact that there are certain rules and regulations that can't be violated. But the problem that that we had last year was that even though there was an effort by the Department of Environmental Conservation, it wasn't enough. And we had complaints all summer long, all through the fishing season, that people were catching plastic bags in their props, and viscera and fish heads were being caught in drift nets all over the river systems, and the fish waste was being caught in fish nets, subsistence fishing nets, all the beaches of Bristol Bay. And it's not, you know, it's not unusual because of the size of the fishery last year. And the size of the fishery, as far as we can anticipate, will be a little less. There'll be a little less activity than last year, but we're expecting a lot, because the last report I got from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute is that all the fresh fish has been sold, most of the frozen has been sold, and canned salmon is moving very well. And there's a tremendous demand out there for fresh salmon at this point in time, so you know that there's going to be an awful lot of activity early in Bristol Bay. So we can expect there's going to be more of a problem in the fish and solid waste disposal area in Bristol Bay. My recommendations to the committee are that a fish and solid waste disposal program for the 1984 fishing season be funded, and I didn't put the word adequately or anything else in there, but they'd be funded to accomplish the following goals. Plan and implement a Bristol Bay fish and solid waste disposal plan for the 1984 fishing season, which would allow the Department of Environmental Conservation to station a permanent representative in Bristol Bay. And that's someone there that's what everyone recommends. The fishing organizations, individuals are wondering why we don't have someone in the Bristol Bay area. When you look at the magnitude of the fishery and the amount of activity that's generated and the fish waste, why isn't someone there to make sure that there's a presence in the area so that people always know that there's someone there that's going to be taking care of these problems? Second one is to send all processors, support vessels, and fishermen information about bilge oil, sewage, and fish waste regulations that will be in effect in 1984. This isn't anything different than what was done last year. I think there was a good effort by the Department of Environmental Conservation to do this, but that has to be repeated again this year. Third thing is increase the mandates of actual on-site inspection and patrols of shore-based and floating processors. I looked at a report from the Department of Environmental Conservation, and the number of mandates is just totally inadequate for the amount of fishing activity out there. They've got to increase that, and that's going to require more funding. And there's got to be a Department of Environmental Conservation presence during especially in the height of the season. They've got to do their work of inspections going into the season, but at the height of the season, I think it's critical that their presence be known, that it's known that environmental conservation people are out there. Number four, reestablish contact with, that's Department of Environmental Conservation, reestablish contact with enforcement and judicial officers regarding ADEC mission in Bristol Bay as it relates to fish and solid waste disposal. They made a contact with all the fish and game people, protection people, the magistrates and so forth, and let everybody know what the penalties were for violating these, violating the ADEC regulations, and that really helped. And then have ADEC establish a fish and solid waste disposal task force of concerned parties to address fish and solid waste disposal problems in Bristol Bay and make policy recommendations for legislative and administrative consideration. And this group would be made up of people from the fishing industry, from the fishing organizations, and the general public to address this thing so that you people know what to do on an annual basis and what the public expects the administration to do to make sure that we take care of the fisheries problem in Bristol Bay this year. But we were able to, I think, get a fairly clear idea that despite the fact that the department had done a good job, they need to do a better job. Because the public health, I think, could be endangered if we don't take care of that unground viscera heads and take care of the solid waste. And there's an awful lot of coordination that has to go on between ADEC and the municipalities that are affected, and they're trying to make sure that we can move whatever solid waste that they have off from the floating vessels to where we have disposal areas in Dillingham or in the Bristol Bay Borough or other communities, so that they're not dumping all that garbage into the bay out there, because that, of course, is our bay, and we don't want to lose it. We'd like to protect it and have it feed us in the next 100, 200 years.
Was there any? Did you look at anything at whether penalties were adequate to cause people to? Do you feel that that's necessary to look at?
I think it would be a good thing to look at, and I think it would be very helpful in preventing any problems as a preventative measure. I think we may want to increase the penalties, but even before you can get a penalty, you have to have somebody out there to say something did go wrong or something did happen, and you need a body. The body's got to be out there to find those people that may be breaking the law or violating the regulations. And you can understand too. We can't come down too hard on them, because if you have a situation where a grinder breaks down, one of the proposals by the department was to shut them down. Well, you get into a Bristol Bay situation, they're at the height of the season, and people are catching 2 million fish a day. To shut a fish one processor down, it'll do significant damage to your pocketbook. So it's got to be looked at very carefully. And I think your idea, Representative McBride, is a good one. I think, and I didn't look into it. I don't know what the penalties are, and I don't know how many citations were issued either. I didn't look into that at all. That certainly wouldn't hurt to look at that and feel that there's a need to increase them. That means that they ought to be done.
Thank you. Well, no, this I think is more of a, could be a problem elsewhere. Not just Bristol Bay. I guess I'm kind of a believer that we ought to, re-fertilize our estuaries around here, because it does provide the basis for future resources. And I've seen areas where the fish wastes, have not been returned, and areas completely now, not necessarily void, but a significant reduction is seen. But I think if we're looking at getting the information out to these processors and to make sure that they understand and have received and are aware of whatever information we are, that there should be some coordination between DEC, Department of Revenue, Department of Commerce, when licenses and applications are applied for to process, to make sure that everything is received. You just don't go and get a license and then get a permit, and then you have a tendency to just overlook what other regulations you may have to follow. But if you go to one central agency and pick up everything that you need, and some sort of letter or correspondence there that goes back to DEC indicating that you've received, you are aware of all these things, and what are some of the things that you are doing to alleviate the potential problem, get that communication moving back and forth might be a solution, but it's a step in that direction. But the major problem is to get the coordination between the various departments to try to achieve that end.
Thank you. I think the DAC had a good presence in the Bay, and they, you know, they tried to actively do things like that, and, you know, sent out letters to processors and things like that, and some of their recommendations at the end, or some of their observations weren't quite accurate, I didn't think, but I think their presence was there was good, and hopefully we can get the same amount or more back, you know, like Yelp's recommendation, permanent resident, I mean, permanent person out there. You might expand on what's going to happen, you know, like through this follow-up meeting tomorrow.
Yeah, well, tomorrow there will be a meeting with FDA, EPA and DEC, and we're going to be talking about the very same thing with those people, and to develop this kind of coordination we feel is necessary so we get the municipalities and everybody involved and lift the awareness level of the problem up a little bit higher to where, from where it is now. But I think also the need for coordination has been pretty well met by the department, in my view, because they wrote to fishermen and seafood processors and the magistrate, and as soon as they, what they've started to do now, as soon as the Department of Fish and Game is notified that that someone's going to come in and process, they in turn get in contact with them, because whenever some processor is going to come in, you know, they get on a list that's a public record, and then ADC picks that up, and then they get in contact and let them know. They send them all the regs, send them everything, and the purpose of the meeting tomorrow is to address these things, to emphasize the need for continuing that type of coordination so that everybody knows going into the 1984 season what they're up against in their operating in, well, in any part of the landscape, basically.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have you had a chance to, well, maybe I should first, if I may, ask you, the subcommittee for DEC, that's Fish and Game, the DNR subcommittee? Is that a separate subcommittee?
I think it's a separate one.
Okay, I was thinking it was the same one. I was going to mention the representative went to the thing here, but whoever the members are of that finance, House Finance Subcommittee that deals with the budget of the Department of Environmental Conservation and whatnot, speak with those three individuals and bring to their attention that there's a particular component of the DEC budget that you're concerned with, as well as speaking to your own representative. So that see if you can't ensure that maybe intent language is in there, or at least that the committee is aware of legislative concern, or that is the agency is aware of legislative concern.
Representative Gall, I've already notified Representative Bettis of the possible information coming to.
Is he the chair of that?
I don't know. I think it's him and Ben. And
then it is the same as Fish and Game and DNR, as far as I know. So it would be Ben and Ron Wendy and Tony Gaskin and Bob Bettis. Yeah, I would certainly have a meeting with each of them.
Well, there are two things that I recommended very quickly going into this particular section of the assignment you gave me. That one, that you needed to get a 1984 plan out as quickly as possible from DEC so that you had an idea of what they're planning. And as I read their plan, they're something considering something like a 40% decrease in that area, which I think should cause you some concern.